This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
All right, hello, welcome along. My name's Dan and it's time for a quick flick around the universe in the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is the only place where you can get all the most amazing, weird, epic and dangerous things that's happening in science delivered straight to your ears. Now this week we'll find out what happens when galaxies get so close to each other that one has to eat the other. Also, you can hear about the oldest fossils that have ever been found, and we'll get one of the questions that you have been sent in over on the iTunes podcast store. We'll get it answered by a professor whose contribution to the science world has been so huge that he's been awarded by the actual Queen for it. That's on the way after we catch up with one of our favourite geniuses on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's Professor Hallock.
Hallock's Hearing Help Desk.
So, Professor, have you been anywhere really noisy recently or been listening to loud noises? They're common causes of hearing problems.
Proud boys? How can being proud stop you hearing? I've never heard anything so silly.
Loud noise! Not proud boys. His hearing's gone again. How can volume cause hearing loss?
Well, loud noises can damage the tiny hairs inside the inner ear that send messages to the brain. Once damaged, they can't fix themselves, and this can lead to tinnitus, an annoying ringing sound in your head, or even hearing loss.
Crikey! How loud does the sound have to be? Should we all be whispering?
That might be kinder to our ears, but I'm not sure it would help us understand each other. We measure sound in decibels. It helps us put sounds into categories from the quietest to the loudest. The quietest sound audible to a healthy human ear is 0 decibels. Let's check it out with my audiometer. It's very difficult to find complete total silence, in fact, but this is pretty close. My whispering is about 15 decibels.
You'll have to speak up, Mel. I can't hear a thing.
All right. Normal talking, like this, is about 60 decibels. Things get much louder than this in everyday life. Let's go outside and find some more noises.
Well, this is nice. What a lovely sunny day. People enjoying their gardens. Looks like barbecue weather.
Is that a bee?
Nope, just a lawnmower. That's about 90 decibels close up.
Oh, that made me jump.
Car horns like that come in at around 110 decibels. That's a level that can be harmful to our hearing. Fortunately, things like lawnmowers and car horns are only loud for a short time. Someone, though, who uses a lawnmower all day should use ear protectors, a way to protect ears from damage or hearing loss. Sometimes you might find yourself somewhere even louder. Rock concerts and jet planes create very high volumes of noise. Time to put those ear protectors on.
Why? Don't you like the music?
No, it's just that sounds above 140 decibels can cause instant damage to your hearing. Let's get inside the clinic.
So, how might someone realise that they've damaged their hearing?
Signs that you may have a problem with your hearing include having to sit close to the television or having to turn the volume up on the radio, even when other people are telling you it's too loud. Or you might find it difficult to realise that your name is being called unless the person is very close to you. Or you might have to change ears when you're using the telephone. So you can see why it's so important to protect your ears from loud noises. They can cause hearing loss. You need to be especially careful when listening to music or playing video games on headphones because it's very easy to turn the volume up to unsafe levels. Once those tiny hairs inside your ears have been damaged there, you cannot fix them.
Ear protectors all around then? Although I can't hear much without them at the moment.
Yes, we haven't got to the bottom of your problem yet.
My bottom's not the problem, Mel. And it's rather rude of you to say.
Professor!
Hallock's Hearing Help Desk, with support from Phonak. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallock's.
This week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, we've got a proper science expert to answer one of your questions. On the phone, we've got someone whose impact on science has been so great that he's been knighted by the Queen for it. Professor Sir Michael Berry. Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Thank you.
Now, today, our question is from Arjun and his little sister, Ashni, who ask, why can't you get to the end of a rainbow? Now, very quickly, Sir Michael, start by talking to us very simply about what a rainbow actually is.
A rainbow is raindrops lit up by the sun. Now, when you see a rainbow, the drops, raindrops that you're seeing depend on where you are. So if you move, you see different raindrops. It looks as though it's the same rainbow, but the raindrops that are reflecting the sunlight are different ones. Now, so, for example, if you and me, both of us are on opposite sides of the street, we will look and we'll see, oh, look at that rainbow. It looks the same, but it's not. We're seeing different raindrops. So those raindrops are actually quite far away. The raindrops you see coming down at the bottom of the rainbow, they look as though they hit the land somewhere, so you might think you could walk there or drive there, and you'd see the bottom of the rainbow. But you can't, because as you go towards it, the raindrops that you're seeing get farther and farther away, so you never actually can reach them. The reason that you're seeing just a few raindrops and not all of them, you think of going up in a rainstorm, and imagine that you're a tiny creature and you're seeing a raindrop falling and it's big, right? Now, sunlight comes, and think of one of the rays of light from the sun which will hit somewhere on that raindrop. It'll bend inside the raindrop, it gets reflected off the back side, the back face of the raindrop, and comes out again. Now, that's just one ray. But different rays from the sun hit different bits of that raindrop, and they come out differently. And it turns out, and this is something that comes out of the mathematics of raindrops and light, the light doesn't come out evenly. It comes out concentrated in special directions. So when you're looking up, you only see those raindrops on whose bright rays your eye is. So different raindrops will send out their bright rays, but they won't hit your eye. The ones that do are the ones you see. And of course, as you move, those raindrops move. So that's why you can never, ever reach the bottom of the rainbow. Or if you were up in a plane, you might think you could reach the top of the rainbow, but you can't do that either, for the same reason. The drops get farther and farther away as you try to get closer to them.
Tell us more about the colours that we see then.
Colours is different. Colours is that, think of those rays of light going in and bending and coming out again. The angle through which they bend depends slightly on the colour of the light. Now, sunlight has all colours mixed in. It's sort of whitish, I mean yellowish, but it's actually a mixture of all colours. And the raindrop separates those colours very slightly. And it separates them because the angle that the light comes out depends on the colour. So when you're looking up at the sky, the different colours that you see in the rainbow come from different raindrops, slightly different raindrops.
I went swimming earlier on today. When I got out of the pool and I opened my eyes under, so they're full of water, they're full of chlorine. Then when I look at the lights that are hanging overhead, I can see halos of all the colours. Is that a similar phenomenon? Is that why that's happening? Because my eyes are breaking up the light?
Did you have your goggles on?
I don't wear goggles, Sir Michael.
You don't wear goggles, right, okay. Do you have glasses? No.
No glasses.
Nothing like that. Well, it might be. This was when you're underwater or when you've come out?
When I've come out, it's at the end of a long 50-lap swimming
session. So you're wet, your eyes are wet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So maybe there's drops of water on your eyes which are bending the light. Oh, the other thing. Oh, was it kind of misty? Was there a mist?
Yes, so there would have been a hot haze in the sky as well.
Ah, well, yes. Well, that's a slightly different thing. Sometimes you can see, if you go out on a moonlit night, sometimes you can see little halos around the moon. They're not nearly as big as the rainbow, but they're kind of faintly coloured. And that's called a corona. Now, what that is, that really is a wave effect, and that's from tiny little ice crystals in the sky. Even on a warm day, the sky far high above it is cold. Tiny little ice crystals or tiny little raindrops, tiny, tiny mist drops high up in the sky, and they're too small to bend the rays of light because they're smaller than the wavelength, but they can give, by a kind of scattering of the light, they can give, using by interference, these coronas. So that's perhaps what you saw. It's very common in actually. They're more common than rainbows.
Fantastic. A brilliantly thorough answer there to Arjun and Ashni's question. Professor Sir Michael Berry, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye now, Michael. Thank you so much. Very quickly, hello to Isaac B, who listens to the show every week, and he loves the Dangerous Dan part, and he wants to know how the world was formed billions of years ago. Also, hello to Aishan, who listens every week in the car, and he wants to know why bulls get so angry when they see the colour red. Top questions there, thanks so much. You see, that's what I love about science and doing this show, because no matter how smart you think you're getting, there's always something else that you want to know. There's always another question that you need to ask. And remember, if you've got something knocking around your head, a little sciencey question that you just can't figure out the answer to, maybe something you were told at school by someone in the playground and you thought, there's no way that's true. Or maybe you were told something in class by your actual science teacher and you think, how can that possibly be true? Well, I can figure it out for you. We'll get a proper science expert on the show to answer it for you. All that you need to do is to let me know first. You can do that by leaving it as a review over on the iTunes podcast store. So open that up, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, drop your name, give us 5 stars if you fancy, and in the comment section, write your question, and I will get a proper science expert to come on this show and to answer it for you. Right, it's time for Dangerous Dan. This week, we're finding out what happens when a galaxy gets so hungry that it needs to eat another one. In science terms, it's called galactic cannibalism. This is when one swirling galaxy with all the planets and the stars and the possible life that might be inside it, it collides, it hits into another galaxy. Now, everything in the universe has gravity. You do as well, but a tiny, tiny amount of gravity. Galaxies, though, they have a much stronger force of gravity. So imagine it like this. Both of these galaxies, they have gravity arms. And then when they meet each other, they wrestle. And the strongest of the two galaxies always wins. And then it reaches out this huge gravity arm and it sucks in the other galaxy. And then they start to merge. One takes over the other. The planets start to distort. The orbits start to skew. Galactic clouds collide. New stars are born and new life could get possibly made. Now, one of the closest galaxies to us is called Andromeda. And at this very moment, right now, it's currently eating another galaxy. It's swallowing up satellites and stars, and scientists think that in about 3 billion years, Andromeda might get so big, so strong, and so hungry, it might come along to try and snack on us. You can find out who may possibly be the first tourist to ever go into space in just a sec. That's all on the way in this week's Science in the News. First, let's take a quick tour around the UK. This is with our series called Britain's Digital Railways, where Bex from the club on Fun Kids, every afternoon at 4 o'clock, and I, we're taking a tour all around the rails of the UK, learning about trains of the future.
Britain's Digital Railway. Stations are where passengers begin their journey. Whether that journey is on a train, tram or tube, they're a really important part of the rail network. And with over 3,000 of them across Britain, they really do come in all shapes and sizes. Some are fairly small and may just have one platform, whilst others, often in cities or places where passengers make connections to other parts of the country, have many platforms, connected by footbridges or underpasses. Sometimes these stations might also be underground. Bex and Dan find out more.
Only 3 more stops, Bex. Nearly there.
It feels like we've stopped at 1,000 stations already. But it's funny how they're all kind of different.
Oh, man, there's a snack shop with cake. I'm starving. Do you think we've got time for a quick slice?
I doubt it. Looks nice though.
Many things you'll see at stations are there to help your journey. Ticket offices or machines to buy tickets, timetables to help plan journeys, and departure boards and station staff to tell you when trains are leaving and from which platform. Through speakers, you'll also hear messages to keep people up to date and information to keep people safe. There's something all stations have. Platforms. You can't get on a train without them. To help passengers get on and off the train, tube or tram, it's best when platforms are of a certain height, generally the same height as the doors. Really old platforms might vary in height and not suit modern rail vehicles. In London, deep tube trains are much smaller and lower than overground trains, something that's very obvious when they share the same platform.
A way of keeping passengers safe is by making sure the gap between the train and the platform is as small as possible. Otherwise, people might fall onto the track when getting on or off. It's best if platforms are straight, so that the staff can see the whole train when preparing to close the doors. But sometimes, that's not always possible. Some of London's underground tube lines were built to follow the route of the roads above, and are sometimes very twisty. And as modern tube carriages are longer compared to their Victorian counterparts, at some stations, you might need to
mind the gap.
You should always stay behind the yellow line on the platform. Trains can pass at speed, and you don't want to get caught in the draft.
Oh, but why are they called platforms? Because I thought platforms were things that were kind of high up. They don't seem very high.
Well, most platforms are higher than the track. If they weren't raised, you need a stepladder to get onto the train, like in some parts of Europe.
Oh, looks like we're on the move.
Hey, look, there's another kind of station. It's a freight depot.
As well as passengers, the railways carry freight around the country, taking heavy traffic off the roads, which is good for the environment. Freight trains need their own type of station, where goods are loaded from lorries and ships onto trains, from train to train, and from trains onto lorries. Sometimes you find them near to passenger stations, although larger freight depots might be separate and near to ports or motorway junctions. Today, freight is generally either carried in containers or in special wagons to carry materials such as coal, metals, oil and aggregates.
That's cool. It's good to know that railways are helping take lorries off the roads.
Yeah. Although I don't think you get a slice of cake as easily at a freight station.
Britain's Digital Railway, with support from the Royal Academy of Engineering. Find out more at bunkidslive.com/railway.
Let's find out what's been in the science this week then. Scientists have identified the earliest known animal on record. They found it as a fossil of a 558 million year old oval shaped creature. They think it might be related to a jellyfish. It's been found in northwest Russia in the White Sea, and it's called Dickinsonia. Also, tech genius Elon Musk, he's revealed that the billionaire Yusaku Maezawa from Japan, he will be the first private tourist to fly around the moon. Elon Musk's company SpaceX will take the tycoon on its mission in 2023, and it will be the first lunar journey that humans have made since 1972. The problem is, the rocket hasn't even been made properly yet, and Musk isn't even sure that it will be possible in 5 years' time. And finally, giant pandas, they can tell their mate from a specific call. Scientists have done some research on these massive creatures, and they found out that they can identify each other from their sheep-like bleats, the sound that they make from up to 20 metres away, and then they can figure out whether they know each other or not, and whether they've ever met each other before. Right, that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. We'll be back in hopefully 7 days' time with more of the most amazing, weird, wonderful and deadly stuff from all around the universe. If you've got a question that you want answered by a proper science expert, I mean a proper one, today we had an actual knight of the British realm on the show to explain things for you. If you've got a question racking around your brain, let me know. I'll try and get someone to answer it. You need to tell me as a review over on the iTunes podcast store. So open that up, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and let me know. Also, while you're on iTunes, it's one of the best places that you can find all our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. You can get them there on the free Fun Kids app, and you can find them all the time over at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids is a digital radio station. You can listen to it all around the UK. We're on that free Fun Kids app. And as always, find us at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.